This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Until I was 35, then the Punani tsunami hit. And honestly, I went through more crumpet than a Warburton's factory.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 18 of Couples Quarantine. I'm James Haskell.
I'm Chloe Madeley.
We've got a very special guest. But before I introduce them, you might, viewers who have listened to this before and seen this before, may know that we had a huge, huge argument at some points, and almost, there was almost some separation going on over the subject of getting a dog, right? Chloe was, I don't want dogs, I don't understand dogs, dog people are weird, dog people smell, right? You know, why would you want to have a dog? You'll love the dog more than me. A month and a half later, we've got Bert, who's sitting in his crate behind us, right? And Chloe has turned into the ultimate dog woman. She treats the dog like it's a person. She talks to it like a person. She the other night, this example, right, I went, like, Bert, come on, we've got to go out for a wheeze before bed. And she went, no, you're going to wake him up too aggressively. Bert. And I was like, Chloe, it's a fucking dog.
At this point, it's like 11 o'clock at night, so way past his bedtime. He was fast asleep. He had to go to the toilet, as all dog owners of which I am one, will know. He had to go to the loo before we put him in the crate. And James, all of a sudden, was like, he's fast asleep. He was like, bah! Like slapping his legs, whistling. I was like, shh, 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 shh. I was like, it's 11 o'clock at night. He's asleep. He's got to go back to sleep in a minute. Gently, I was like, but wake up, come on. And he started walking about the room. He had a huge go at me. He was like, you're a freak. You're a weirdo. Yep. It's a dog, not a person. Okay. Anyway, I'm just a better dog owner than
so James. That's just a bit of information. So the point is that you can have an argument, but if your missus is on board, you basically get what you want. That's rule number one. We've learned a couple of quarantine. Our guest today, I've always been a huge fan of his. He is a multi-talented, I want to say sex symbol / comedian / TV commentator, pundit, presenter. It is Russell Kane, everybody.
Yeah.
Hello, how you doing? It's so lovely hearing the relationship with the dog. Are you breastfeeding or bottle feeding?
I love it that you went straight in with a crack. I actually wanted to ask you, like,
what type of dog is it? You didn't say what breed. We can't imagine the type of parenthood you're having. What are you trying to bring up? A Dalmatian with loads of energy? A pug that's quite chilled?
No, it's
all right, calm down, Caesar Milan. How the fuck do you know about your dog?
Yeah, do you have a dog?
I do. I have a pug, and I'm really into the dog training and obedience and everything like that. My dog goes on stage, does all kinds of things, been on TV twice this month.
So oh my God.
He has to be extra work by command. He works by sign language. I crate trained him. Is that a crate I can see in the background there? Is it or not?
He's a five-month-old Fox Red Lab, and he's incredibly good looking. I'm not joking. I'm not just blowing smoke off his ass. He is the best looking dog I've ever seen.
A Fox Red Lab?
Fox Red Lab.
He's an absolute dreamboat.
He looks like a fox and a Labrador had a puppy.
Yeah,
gotcha.
But he's a dreamboat. He's honestly, I would say, the second best.
Are you sure you've not adopted a fox? it's going through the bins behind you.
Wait. But all dogs do have bushy ginger tails with white tips, don't they?
Well, I'm so happy for you. I am, as you know, bipetual, which means I own cats and dogs.
Yes.
I don't get the cat person, dog person debate. I couldn't live without either any of my beasties, so I'm a real animal person.
That's really interesting. So you feel like you're just as attached to the cat as the dog?
Well, this is the thing people don't understand about cats. We don't understand about that pussy here. Is that cats...
I'm really adverse with the pussy, I had the cats, I don't care.
If we sat down to have a conversation about dogs, we'd have a big long discussion. I don't think we should get a Labrador, it needs lots of walking. Why don't you get a pug? Oh, it's not a proper dog. It's brilliant. We'd go right into the breed characteristics.
Yeah.
If I said we're going to get a cat, you'd be like, don't like cats. It wouldn't be, you wouldn't even entertain that the gulf between a Burmese cat and a Persian cat is bigger temperament-wise than the gulf between a Chihuahua and a Pitbull, in my opinion.
God, you actually
it's
know loads.
So different raising an Oriental Burmese cat. My cats sit, high five, fetch, recall, they're not out of the room. You get all, they both walk on leads. You get all of that dog type connection, but they bury their own shit in the garden.
I've seen this. I've got to say, you know, because before we met properly, I was obviously a big fan of yours. I love the caning stuff that you do. And I've seen on your Instagram the stuff about the cat. And obviously sometimes, depending on what hat you're wearing, because we did your show, Boys Don't Cry, which is a very successful podcast, which people need to check out. But we'll talk about a bit of that later. And we actually talked about different personality traits when Chloe and I did it about, you know, being extrovert, introvert, or an ambivert. You being a cat and dogvert or pervert, or whatever it is. I've seen you plug in the cats and the dogs, but the cat stuff, I can't believe they bury their own shit and do the high five, because you said that, but I thought you'd just probably done...
Cats naturally bury their own poo, but the mistake people make with cats is they bring them into the house and don't train them. So you've got your average cat, you'll be stroking it three times and it'll turn around and claw you and they'll be like, oh, that's what cats are like. It's because people don't correct or train cats when they're kittens. There's not much difference I've followed in the raising of Terry, my Burmese, than Colin, my pug. I thought, apart from the crate training, which you don't need with cats, and the doggy, like poo training, the dogs, cats do it automatically. I've used exactly the same stuff, same energy, same discipline. And now I've got cats that you can pick up and hold like babies. They're safe when kids come around.
To kind of, what's it called, join it up to the couples conversation, I feel like it's been really good for you and me, because obviously we don't have kids and like we don't have a property together. He has his house where we are now and I've got my flat in London. And I feel like it's been
the
really
life
good
raft,
for,
I call that, the life right? raft stage.
Yeah, abort.
Yeah, the life raft.
I'm out.
I totally approve of pet. It's like training for decide, do we want children? Are we going to have children?
Yeah.
And people often get a cat or a dog. Some couples might want to do the foundation course, gerbil.
That's a good idea.
Some people aren't ready for cat or dog, so they start a gerbil. There is even an ant certificate you can do if you want to look after an ant together.
Do you feel like it prepared you for having your daughter?
Yes, or, totally and utterly. Yes,
so because explain this.
But when you say it as a dog owner, people, you know, Mother Earth and Daddy Earth, parents, you can't describe having a dog to having a baby. Get out of my house. Bullshit.
Totally prepares you
with the feelings of irrational love, of making mistakes, i.e. earlier, like you've got the battle here between discipline and waking him up, and they'll be gentle with it, all of those things. But between not being able to go on holiday properly, between having to think about something else, cleaning up shit. And it's just that ramped up with a baby. So it's brilliant training, in my opinion, and I've done both.
Oh, well, that is fantastic.
I felt exactly the same way about that, just because people say it's totally different.
It's not totally different.
But it's not totally different. It's impossible for it to be totally different. You know, and also, people always say having a dog's harder. I'm like, no, when the dog's a little dick, you can put it in his crate, let it calm down, give it a snack, and it's fine. When your kid's a dick and it's 18... Yeah. What would you do? When your daughter, you know, dogs never come in a thong at 15 going, Dad, I'm leaving the house. You're like, you're fucking not, you know.
That's the other macabre benefit is dogs don't live to 18. So if you have made a mistake, 10 years to write it out.
That's what my physio said. My physio, Kevin, he went, why are you, he looked a bit stressed today. I said, oh, fucking Chloe. I said, I love her, but, you know, she's having a proper row about this dog. She doesn't want one. He went,
what?
She does know a dog's not for life, doesn't she? And I went, yeah, I've told her that, but she doesn't appreciate it.
When was this?
As soon as we had a massive
it's when you were still trying
there.
For a dog.
Yeah.
Pushing and pushing.
Actually,
and pushing.
The way we look, it's lucky we wouldn't give birth to an actual dog.
You do that.
They're trolling really themselves, listeners.
Oh yeah, but we do troll ourselves at all times.
You troll me all.
Well, firstly, off subject. How are you doing? How are you finding lockdown 2.0?
So, obviously, there was a period, it was a tantalising period in the middle where my analogue business went back online. So the theatres reopened. We took these big theatres on, 2,000 seats, stuck 300-400 people in them, and it was legal to play them. And it was like life was returning back to normal. Mm. I'm checking my privilege. Yes, I'm lucky. Yes, I've still been able to earn a living and do everything I need to do, but my business hasn't. And you do sort of feel if all of rugby was dying, even if you were were okay, James, you would still feel a sort of associated pain with the rest of rugby. Mm. And that's what I am like with stand-up. You feel a sort of a brother and sisterhood with all your other performers, and it's just been absolutely horrible seeing it all shut again.
Yeah.
But I have turned into daytime telly legend. I described myself today, funnily enough, Chloe, as Richard Madeley on Red Bull, because I've been over on Channel 4 repping it with Steph's Packed Lunch. So I've discovered I can talk about everything from cactuses to, you know, fashion decisions, and they let me do a bit of stand-up. So I've been very happy, and hopefully the theatres will reopen again soon. And I'll start rinsing it like a Bosch dishwasher again.
Well, they're very good. So I was going to say, like, I know that we've known you for years, and we've come to your shows, and we've done some of your broadcast stuff. And we obviously absolutely love you, and we love how you speak about your wife. And I wanted to know, the fact that you're a performer, and I'm married to a performer in a very different context, but you are both of a type. How has your kind of relationship or your marriage fared through a time where a performer is stuck indoors and the long-suffering wife can't get out of the house? I mean, how is it all going in terms of your relationship?
Can't speak for anyone else. That has been a massive surprise of the first lockdown, definitely for me. The shit kicked off, I can't remember what day it was, March 24th. On March the 25th, literally the next day, I woke up. I'm going to be doing Facebook Lives. I'm going to do a rant today. I filled the diary of my head and I was at home. Suddenly not absent, not tired, not that guilt of missing Minna, my daughter. Weirdly, I would say from March to certainly October, our relationship was better for it, because the thing, stand-up battles, again, I'm guessing it's the same if you're like international sports person or whatever you're doing in this business, is the absence is what makes me and Lindsay argue, which is a good sign, really. And when I'm like, if I'm doing TV all day and then a gig at night, I don't even want to answer my phone. I don't want to FaceTime. It's hard for some people to understand. I don't want to fucking do anything.
Yeah.
So eat my box of food and save my fake-ass personality for the people that are paying me later. Whereas all of a sudden, I've been Mr. Daddy, I've been camping in the garden. For the first fucking 2 months, I thought I was going to put Lindsay in a wheelchair. We were shagging something rotten. She went full Hawking by April. It was crazy. She was like, please stop bugging me.
And what did you do? Just unplug that and carry on?
Well, I think, as you say, I think the second lockdown was a bit more like the worry of, hang on a second, we're just buying another house. We haven't sold the one we're in. I've taken on all these things thinking I'm the notorious PIMP with no... I don't have a mortgage or a pension, you loser. I'm self-employed in the arts. And then my diary's gone and emptied like Dominic Cummings' eyes. I've been snorting Imodium. That's how scared I am. I know. Listen, I'm not saying this to try and show off, but I'm a late bloomer. There's nothing I can do about it. And my game is not necessarily related to age. And for whatever reason, I've hit my peak creativity, best shows, best reviews. Just got my best ever review in The Guardian 3 weeks ago.
Congrats.
Right now, this is my year I peak. And it's the fucking year I've worked least.
Yeah.
And that is starting to eat away now, this kind of Picasso locked in the basement, burning his artwork. And it sounds so arrogant, but I feel like I might look good for my age, but I'm 45 years old. How many more years of strutting around at 100 miles an hour have I got? I might have 5 big tours in me, and I'm flushing one of them down the drain with a load of chewed up bat and pangolin.
Well, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't love that. Also, Russell, I love it, because every time you make an amazing joke, you laugh. Yes. I'm like, you're not meant to laugh.
Wait, the thing is, the best bit is...
But that is how I process.
You've been locked down so long, you're laughing at your own jokes. That's the best bit. You're like, I'm not used to a crowd.
I've got no other... You know, like some stand-ups, nothing against them, but they're normally much better stand-ups than me, are brilliant writers, but my personality on and off, you know, you guys have seen me off stage, seen me backstage. We've looked each other quite a lot. There isn't really a gap. I've just monetized my personality. So a bit like James, really. It's just you plus a microphone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's the same for you, Chloe. And I know you a little less well than James, but if you, the advantage of that is if your thing is humor, it is a weapon. It is a defense mechanism. Some horrible shit's happened. We've lost family members. I've lost one of my older pets. But humor is what keeps you safe. I always say there must be a reason that ugly, funny men are attractive to women. It must have had a survival benefit. Back in the day, there'd be some guy, the handsome one, and you were being funny in the corner and you still shagged the top bird.
100%. It all comes down to how you make somebody feel. And if you make, male or female, if you make somebody feel good and laugh and want to spend more time with you, then of course, you basically become like crack to them. They're like, want to spend time with you. That's
so,
how you
So what you're saying is I'm in the corner of the cave. The good looking one's been eaten by a saber tooth. She's feeling upset. I roll in and make some fucking laugh going, oh, he's a bit of a pussy anyway. Wee. And we're in. And before you know it, I've got a club over the back of the head and taken her back to my cave.
Well, you've got the best of both worlds. You could probably club the saber as well. So I
yeah, say, well, yeah, possibly.
Spicy, yeah.
Roll it in seven secret spices. Fry it.
Well, put it in a pit of bread straight in the gob.
Kentucky Fried Saber.
One thing I've got to ask you is you saw the government said, obviously, reskill, rethink, retrain. Was there any part of you that thought, I actually might have to start looking at some other bits because of how bleak it was? And the fact that, for example, obviously, since I've retired, you know, all my stuff is public facing, after dinners, corporate speaking, DJing, you know, all those stuff. I haven't had that for ages. I did some filming stuff in lockdown and did a couple of virtual stuff. But I've obviously been sitting around going, what the fuck am I doing at the moment? Have you had that at all?
I did at first in the March, April. I said to Lindsay, it's time to, we have to consider, this could be a 4-year, at the time we were thinking to 3-4 years and I could earn no money at all for 4 years. So I did have a couple of plan Bs in place. I had did have a short but successful career as in advertising before I did this. So I was ready to go back into that, something really easy to do from home, headlines, creative concepts for big brands. And I wouldn't have had any qualms about putting the Justice hat on the floor. And I'm working class at the end of the day. You do what you do to pay the bills. By the time I got to April, May, and I realized, shit, I'm quite good at being funny down a webcam. Where I've been doing all these caning blogs, accidentally, I'd sort of prepared for a pandemic. So some of the other stand-ups, well, what do you want to be giving your material away in a bedroom? It's, you can save it for the theatres. So I was the person, the prepper with beans in the basement. Everyone laughing at my beans. All of a sudden, nuclear bomb goes off. Yeah. Fucking bean fest. But I've been very careful to constantly check my privilege because you've got to, if you're one of the lucky ones like me, you've got to take care of the rest of your business. So I'm really involved in helping to try and make things work for everyone, not because I'm just some wanky do-gooder, because I'm selfishly interested in comedy surviving.
Two things. What was your, can you give me any advertising slogan that you came up with that you're quite proud of? Can you remember anything off the top of your head? There must be something because you said you're quite good at it. Like,
yeah, so, well, the last thing I did was I did a big Lucozade campaign at the end. The last thing I did was a visual idea, actually, which was where Lucozade, the energy benefit, was spelled out in bubbles. So if you're at a petrol garage, the petrol pumps were like spelled out in bubbles. So I translated anything energy based you would see in your environment would be spelled out with a Lucozade bubble. So I did that. I also launched Green and Blacks, was the last thing I did, the Green and Blacks chocolate, which now seems so massive. Everywhere. But when I went before I left work in 2006, it was just a little startup. So the line, it deserves a little respect. That was me and the creative planner, Simon Callender. You might not remember the launch line, but that was the line that...
Oi, look at this guy's got Russell. Fucking more layers than
onion. Congratulations. Would you go back to it? Would you happily go back to it if you had
to? Yes, happily. Yeah. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. You got to remember, I'm not getting the violin out here. My mum's a cleaner. My dad's a manual labourer. My fucking Uncle Bob once owned an ice cream van. I am leading a blessed existence.
Yeah.
To sit on a purple cushion and think of a headline for a chocolate bar. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I should be in a beeping stuff through or shoveling ballast on a building site. Something's gone wrong and I'm not going to question the wiring.
How did you find trying to do stand-up online, actually, without the crowd interaction? I suppose because you've been ranting on the caning stuff.
That's what I mean. So when I first did the caning, it was 2016, 2017, I was working on a project, a survival show of all things, with a YouTuber. And this YouTuber said to me, why do none of your lot put their material online? I don't understand it. We're cleaning up here with substandard jokes. You can be mildly amusing on YouTube and have a living. He said, So why don't you lot come and wipe out? And I said, it doesn't work like that. We really craft our material and we can't give it away. But what about your B-list stuff that's not quite good enough for the theatre? And I
thought,
why the fuck does no one do that? So I went back home. And it took, I would say, 6 months for me to work out the timing of being funny and leaving a gap for an imagined laughter. And I calibrated that by looking at comments, feedback, doing a few things live. And eventually I got my first few viral hits. And I've been doing that for 4 years. So when this shit hit the fan, everyone's like, oh my God, how are we going to do a gig on Zoom? I'm like, well, that's easier than what I've been doing because I've got comments in the comment bar or a few heads laughing. So I've had, taking to it, you know, duck to water. And now my diary is quite full in December. I'm doing all the office parties, all the tech firms that can't have a comedian in a room in a hotel. I'd pop up as a floating head, rip the shit out of the MD, then fuck off again. I'm in my lounge watching Netflix with a glass of wine by half 10.
Let's just say hypothetically, everything goes straight back to normal after this lockdown, which obviously it won't. But if it did, do you think that you would keep up kind of the momentum and the attention which you're giving online stuff?
Yeah, but well, I to be honest with you, the caning rants at the start, I was trying, let's do 2-3 a week, but I've worked out 1 or 2 a week is plenty. I don't think I would do Zoom gigs if theatres were open. They, as soon as the theatres reopened in July and August, they died a death because they are a decent thing to do if the theatres are closed. But they're just one thing that does not, it can't hold a torch to real. You just can't beat human beings. We are apes at the end of the day. We're programmed to connect and touch in thousands of ways. And until the tech gets to a point where we're actual holograms that tricks the brain into thinking it's real, theatres will be alive and well, and it will never be replaced with Zoom, never.
No, I agree.
This is Couples Quarantine.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Couples Quarantine. Now, I know, Chloe, you've been snooping around and actually worked out a little bit about what's going on today, but this episode is sponsored by Athletic Greens, a comprehensive nutritional beverage.
Yeah, with so many stresses in life, it can be really difficult to get in enough fruit and veg, aka micronutrients that our bodies really need. But this is where Athletic Greens can help you out. Their daily all-in-one greens powder is easily added to your day-to-day life with zero worry or fuss.
Do you know what? It's actually really tasty because some green supplements are a little bit ugh, but Athletic Greens does an awesome job packing in 75 vitamins, minerals and whole food source ingredients, including multivitamins, minerals, probiotics, green superfoods. I know I sound like an absolute keto scientist here, but of course I read the boxes. It was my daily reading for the day. It also increases energy and focus and aids with digestion and supports a healthy immune system, all without the need, I won't believe this, to take multiple products.
Athletic Greens is one formula based on the latest research, investing in absorbable and natural sources of each ingredient and going above and beyond in third-party testing to ensure that their customers receive the highest quality supplement.
It's lifestyle friendly whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free or gluten-free, no thanks, and contains less than 1 gram of sugar without compromising on taste. And I've tried this and I agree. I give it my Haskell seal of approval.
So right now, Athletic Greens will support your immune system during the winter months and they're offering our audience a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit the link today. You'll basically never have to buy vitamin D again.
Sorry, did you say a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs?
Yes.
Can I claim that?
I'm sure you can.
Oh, I know it's insider trading, but all you have to do to win this incredible prize is simply visit athleticgreens.com/couples and join health experts, Chloe, athletes, me, and health conscious go-getters around the world to make a daily commitment to their health every day. Again, for the Slow Reader Group, simply visit athleticgreens.com/couples and get your free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs.
This is Couples Quarantine.
So we've the reason we wanted to get you on the show is obviously because A, you're an extremely funny man, but more importantly, you have an incredible relationship with your wife. And the last stand-up that Chloe and I went and watched was when you came to Northampton. You very kindly got us tickets and we sort of walked into this non-stop laugh-a-thon, but you went in and go quite hard at your missus. How would you sum up your lovely wife? Because you sort of make out she's a fiery, you tell us.
She's out of the two of us when it comes to things like organising, banking, planning. I am the nutty meerkat, always on, always analysing, can't switch off, making lists on the wall, tidying up person.
Yeah.
But when the chips are down and we've got a drink in us, she is, I call her Joe Pesci in a wig. She's fucking have it then, you con. She's that one. So she's not as manc as I make a sound. That's for comedy effect. She's from Cheshire, but I always say they're all from Cheshire till the fourth drink. Then they're like, fucking come at me, you bastard. I'm definitely not a confrontation person. I've got this far into my life without, unless you count my rugby games, without having any physical contact with another human being. It's just not in my nature. I use words to de-escalate situations. I can't even recall shouting at another grown man drunk ever in my life in any pub. And I am the messiest of messy, fucked up Ibiza holidays 18 times, rolling down the street. I've never got into ag. It's just not in my nature. Whereas yesterday, for example, literally yesterday, we did a dog walk over the park. And within 2 minutes, Lindsay had taken, "Would you mind picking up your shit? Excuse me, you," into, "Have some responsibility. Take care of your fucking dog. I've got my child." That's where we were. That's no drinks. That's a sober Sunday walk. Your dog's shat all over the floor. His ass was going like a sprinkler. Pick it up. And the woman was like, "He's got diarrhea. Stop bullying me."
And what do you do?
The dog started charging us. And Lindsay's like, "I will strike your animal if it approaches."
"I will strike your animal."
I probably am so polite, I would have, while I was having my leg savage, would have apologised to the dog.
"Yeah, I'm so sorry for hurting your teeth, Mr. Bigglesworth."
She won't take any shit off anyone, ever. Right.
So what do you do when she's kicking off? Do you, like, cower in a corner? Are you, like, what do you do?
What I do for a living, I think, right. I hate saying things which are unrelatable and sound cunty, but I've kept myself off the top parts of the Daily Mail for the wrong reasons my whole career. I've been up for some good stuff here and there. Yeah. I've done a good show. So I'm instantly yesterday, hoodie up, turned away, ready to pick Minna up and protect my daughter from this dog, but ultimately just I let Sylvester Stallone, what I'm going to call it, Joe Pesci, just do her business. When it's got a drink in her, she's something else.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. But you do know that you obviously haven't listened to Couples Quarantine, because pretty much everything we do on this show ends up at the top of those Daily Mail articles.
I like that, because I'm in control of the banter at the moment. What I mean is, right, if it was me losing my cool in the supermarket, having a slight match with Lindsay, and you're seeing my actual argument face, I try to keep that stuff private, only because I like to be the person who makes fun of those stories.
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing with laughter. I didn't discover it till I was single, because I'd never been single my whole life. I've had a long-term girlfriend from the age of 16. I would split up, cry into my duvet, go out, pull on the first weekend and fall in love with the first girl that fucked me. Literally did that till I was 35. I'd slept with five people.
I would describe you both as absolute amateurs in that department.
Yeah, hold on. Like that.
Until I was 35, then the Punani tsunami hit. And honestly, I went through more crumpet than a Warburton's factory. And what I discovered was it's really hard to be sexy when you're fun in the way I like to be sexy, in a kind of masculine way. The girls, no matter how much they fancy me, the mouth was always half open, ready to laugh at anything I said. So the point is this: there are certain things, once people are apt to laugh at you for a living, certain things get closed down. And if you're involved in a story that's too serious or too traumatic in the news, it becomes increasingly hard to mill that into humour. You can, of course, Chloe, you're right, you can do it.
But Russell, are you telling me, because I've seen you both sides, I mean, I've seen you exhausted after a show, right? So obviously you're moving on to the next city. We had a quick chat, you know, you're tired, you've given everything you can on stage, and that's the mark of a good performer. But are you saying you don't really have that the sad clown about you, because we were talking to Jack Whitehall.
I buzz my tits off till I fall asleep.
And fine, because someone like Jack,
forward to the next show.
Because a lot of the expectations, I've met comedians who I wanted to be similar to yourself, life and soul, have a joke. But then as soon as they were off stage or off camera, they were a totally different person, almost slightly depressive. We talked to Jack Whitehall. I got to know him quite well, and he doesn't have that. He's obviously more quiet in real life. But you know, you're saying you're not one of those people.
I think it's the extent. I know Jack a bit. I wouldn't say we're friends. I know him to say hello to. We shared like an area in Ocean Beach once. Obviously, we weren't socializing. Let's talk about comedy. So I don't know him well enough. But my observation is, the better the stand up, the more likely that is. I know that puts me down a bit, but what I mean by that is, the better someone is at writing comedy. I don't write comedy. If the three of us, four of us, let's bring Lindsay along. It's weird. The four of us go out for a drink, something funny happens, Lindsay has a row in a restaurant. I don't go away and write that up. I would go on stage the next night with, I'm going to tell the story of what happened with Madeleine Haskell. And I would just start telling it and see where the funnies are.
Oh, that's amazing.
A proper comedian goes away and writes it, layers it with jokes. Someone like Jimmy Carr would take the people out of it and just put them. You ever notice when you're in a restaurant and do 100 jokes? So there's more likely to be a gap between their stage personality and who they are in real life. I've okay. been like this since I was 11, since I was 12. When I was in the office, everyone was like, why don't you try stand up? So this is just what I'm like. Obviously, I have shit days where I'm pissed off and being a miserable fucker, like every human being, but it doesn't relate to my job unless I've had a real shocker of a gig, then I'm in a bad mood afterwards. But anyone who's fucked up at work should feel miserable afterwards. Let's not medicalize everything.
Yeah.
If you let off an ink cartridge over the boss's pitch and you lose the account, you should be fucked off with yourself. But the next day, dust yourself down. Get out there.
That's such a good point. And what I was going to say in the beginning, when you kept saying like, oh, I don't want to come across as like that. I want to check my privilege and I don't want to be unrelatable. And you say that a lot. And it's really interesting because I think you actually don't realize like how relatable you are as a comedian. And I think part of that is because you're a storyteller. You tell stories about things that happen in your real life that other people can really relate to.
But the downside is I'm awful at, so it's never happened, I'm not showing off, but if I am short or need a story for TV, I can't just make, wouldn't it be funny if Lindsay and I was in a, going for a couple's massage and this, I've tried it. You just don't get the laughs. So I can only work with the truth. Now that is both brilliant and, but very restrictive. I can't even change the names of my aunties and uncles in a joke. It throws my timing out.
Yeah,
I'm like addicted.
You're authentic.
Professionally addicted, but there's so many negatives with that, and there's so many. Like, I'd love to be really good at writing gags, and I am quite good at them, but I end up giving them to other comedians and other shows who should remain nameless, and they can storm the room with them. But I just can't use the written joke. I can only monetize my own personality.
Now, like Chloe and I, you're very kind of open about your relationship. You sort of don't hide behind
small O.
Yeah. Not like. Not like open, not like, you know, three lads round when you're at work. But, you know.
It's like a game of Kaplunk by the time. Like,
looks like a decorator's radio after a
win. That was your one
church candle's been knocked over.
So talk to so why are you so open? Like, do you guys have just a you know, a fantastic relationship? And if so, kind of what are the keys to having such a great, you know, open relationship?
So you've got to remember how Lindsay and I met. Lindsay was in the front row of my audience, so that I spoke to her parents before her, and they just happened to be the three that I picked on in the front row and made fun of them. So the very foundations of our relationship is taking the piss out of each other, a bit of banter. And Lindsay knew when she got into this, because it was a casual thing at first, because I was in the middle of that, you know, my tour of duty in Vajganistan, as I call it. And then this girl comes along and we start falling in love. So she knows that I just take truth on stage the next night. So she would have been gone early doors if she didn't like that.
Yeah.
Whereas Lindsay will do something, she'll say something stupid or something will happen when we're out, and then she'll just look at me and go, put that in your notepad, and she'll tell me to note it down. So she's actually one of the people that you didn't write that down earlier, because I'm just doing my real life. We'll be playing a board game and something hilarious will happen. I'm not like your typical comedian. I better put that in my notepad. Later on, Lindsay will be like, when you and Christine had that fallout, that was so funny, write that down. I'm like, that would make a good routine. So she's often the person telling me to write down some shit that's happened. Even if she's the butt of the joke, she just sort of braces herself. Now and again in certain environments, she'll say to me, please don't do the story about what I did with Prince Charles. Please don't do that at the school, because I had a gig at the school and she didn't want me to do that story. Then she got drunk.
But it is the best story.
Then she got drunk and in the interval she said, do it, and I did it.
Oh, good for her. So she sounds mega supportive. I was going to ask you if you like try out your material on her.
Yes. Well, you don't need to, because she's like, I know, don't get me wrong, I'm definitely a performer and I know how to do it 100 times and find out where the beats are, but she's there. Like, I don't really invent much. Sometimes I put other people, the attendant in the story that weren't there, but I don't change much. So it's funny as a scenario. I don't need to stand up and go, what about if I said this? I'm like, is it funny if I talk about the time you nearly knocked out that bird just as a skeleton? She'll be like, yeah, it is. No, I don't want to talk about it.
What is it? Is there anything that she's told you not to talk about, which you've talked about?
The Prince Charles thing.
I can't remember that.
How do you not remember that?
I can't remember
story?
That. Tell me. Can you put everyone?
Well, it's part of his stand-up, though. Yeah. So
We were given one rule to follow when we met the next in line to the throne. Only one. Don't touch him. You don't put your hands on him. You don't high five. It's not funny if you pinch his ass like Jerry from Spice Girl. It's not funny. You just don't touch him. The security is different to how it was back then. You don't put your fucking hands on him. End of. Like that. Real talking to. And we're stood in a line, smash the talk, top draw banter. We're one of the top couples. His Royal Highness is lingering on us the longest. And he's turned around and walked off. And Lindsay was so pleased with herself. And she'd had a drink. She was like, I smashed it, didn't I? I'm going to go and get my handbag. Let's get wankered. And she moved the first person out of the way that was in front of her, just grabbed the bloke on the waist and shoved him. And it was him. It was him talking to Moira Stewart. She grabbed him just above his ass and went, sorry, babe, just fucking cleared him. It was about four steps from a Haskell face-off against the Kickers.
Oh my God. And what happened? Like, what a security.
So there was traditional touch the earpiece step in from security. Because everyone's like, what was happening? A few people burst out laughing because they'd never seen it. And then, of course, Lindsay, when she had a drink, starts to get upset. And I'm like, you know, like when someone you love is crying and you should want to give them a hug, but sometimes you want to smash their face in. Then we left and had a screaming argument in the Uber.
Do you find you argue mostly over drinking stuff? Does she turn into, because Chloe early days would turn into someone, well, oh, Karen.
Like psycho drunk. Like to the point where I don't think I drank anything for months, like somewhere in the middle of our relationship. Now I don't know what's happened. I'm fine.
Yeah, Chloe, you'd walk into a room and Chloe goes, why don't you just fuck off? And you'd be like, psycho. I've only just gone and got a drink. Like, what's happened here? You're a fucking dickhead.
I'm not like that anymore.
No, you're not like that anymore.
No, it's not that. It's more Lindsay's judgment goes off. The night, we'll have a perfectly nice, like the Halloween, if I just tell you what happened with this girl dressed as a skeleton.
Yeah.
Because I don't get many nights off, many Fridays or Saturdays off. My nights are like the pussy old days that no one wants off. It's like, let's all hang out on a Monday with our best buddies. Like, no one wants to hang out. Yeah. So when I get a Friday off, it's a big deal. And we go out and we have it large and we're like, I feel normal again for a night. And my mates were friends. We've just opened this posh restaurant in Manchester. We've been given the whole table. And Lindsay just, it pisses me off when she doesn't pace herself on the cocktail because she knows she can't handle it. And she's got what I call the broken puppet head. You know where the head's sort of wobbling, sort of, like when the puppet strings have been cut. And I'm like, you're pissed? I'm not pissed, Russell. I'm having fun. And it won't be me she goes for. It will be someone who speaks down to me or something like that.
Speaks down to her.
And it was one, mate. And it was one of those toilets where there's a central queuing area and then it branches off boys and girls, but you share hand washing facilities. So yeah. This is how I got ringside. And they're all queuing for the toilets. Lindsay's like wobblehead waiting for her wee. It was a bit of a long queue for the toilets. And this girl has come in. I'm not joking. She's must have been 5'11", 6 foot. Or a unit, a proper unit, this girl. She was like, this is like obviously coked or something or something wrong with her mentally. She's like, this is the way it's going to be, girls. I need a slash and whichever door opens, I'm going in next. Said it. Tried to do it as a joke, but you knew she was going in. And I'm thinking, please, God, do not let it be the cubicle that Lindsay's standing in front of. And of course, I mean, sod's law, the cubicle opens. Lindsay's 5'3", right? Like a little Italian looking, but... This girl has just stepped in and Lindsay stepped in at the same time. This girl has put her hands on Lindsay and removed her.
I'd knock her out. I'd smack her.
Lindsay has put her hands on her, pulled her, blocked the doorway like a spider's web and said, this is her exact words, I'm not going to die tonight, but there is no way you're pissing before me. That was her exact words. I'm not going to die tonight, but there is no way. Then it's fucking kicked off. The owner, the posh owner for the restaurant, is in the toilet next door having a slash. Is a female. Couldn't write it. How embarrassing. She's not wanting to lob us out because I'm a bit on telly and everything. He's trying to make excuses. And we got rid of the coked up girl that had done it. She's gone out. And then Lindsay's gone, am I in the wrong here? She turned to the next girl in the queue, who's also the skeleton. Well, you back me up. Did she push in? Not knowing the next girl is the nutter's best mate. So she's gone, I didn't see anything. She said, you can fucking back me as well, you lying bitch. So she's gone for her. I've then gone up to the dance floor to try and just like, so embarrassed. And one of the birds is starting trying to chat me up, not realizing I'm with Lindsay. Of course, Lindsay's seen it. And she's gone, why didn't you back me up? And then the mank bird's like, fucking come at me, a bitch. And then that's it. Lindsay's carried out like a Cairn Terrier being carried out of a pub. And our night's over. This is 8:30. We it's 8:30. I'm all dressed up. I was ready for a Halloween party. I then lose my phone in the cab and we're back home at 9:30. You're damn right we had an argument because if she just regulated her temper a little bit better, that would have been a lovely night out.
But does she realise that she's a firecracker?
Yes, absolutely.
Or is she oblivious?
Yeah, the next morning, I've learned a lot of lessons. But I've learned from myself there. I see red. I will work harder on myself and all that stuff.
But sorry, guys. Can I just fucking intercept here and say... This bitch sounds like fun, meaning
no,
your
she
wife.
Did. Yeah,
and
she...
and not only that, but this other psycho bitch that came in and did
deserved.
That,
I
agree. Yeah, deserved that. But also,
I
mean, I would knock her out. And I'm not, well, I don't fight women
no,
when I'm
no,
drunk.
No, you said
men.
That. You said that. I want my wife to be a bit of a pit bull, not with me, right? Because I'm not doing that nonsense. But this fat girl in the gym bowled past Chloe and knocked her out of the way. And she came back and was like, ah, oh, I was in the gym and this fucking fat girl with like makeup on sassed and fucked me into a wall. And I was like, well, do you fill her in? Do you body shot her? She went, no, I didn't want to cause a fuss. I was like, fucking get out. Get out. Unless you're strangling her, I don't want to know.
But the key difference is, James, if you'd worked up as a couple to this amazing date night out that you both really needed, the intelligent thing to do there was go, you're rude, you bitch, and walk off and still have the rest of our night. We didn't, it didn't have to end with us on the street, Lindsay crying, me losing my phone, all that drama, Mary J. Blige. We don't need no more drama, no more pain.
Beyonce over here. I'll tell you a fucking story about Beyonce. Say so we're away for an England game, right? And basically one of the lads stupidly decided that all the girlfriends when they were come over to Ireland.
Oh, give it context.
Yeah, fine.
Give it background.
So basically all the girls had flown out to Ireland for the final game of the Six Nations, right? It was known that the girls were welcome. Nobody in their right mind had any problem with that.
The questions were asked, it was brought up at meetings, can the girlfriends
can the
come?
Girls come out?
And the answer was unequivocally yes.
Yes, right. Yeah, 100% yes, right. Okay. So then, anyway, the night of the thing, someone stood up. I'm not going to name him.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Stood up and gone.
He doesn't even remember this.
He doesn't remember. Goes, right, no girls allowed out tonight. And I'm like, my wife's here. So I was like, lads, we're not having that. Anyway, what's happened is the boys have obviously, because boys pillow talk, because they get a bit fanny drunk and they're like, you know, they're like, well, I didn't say it, but someone else did, right? So they've all...
Just call it Jamie George.
No, not fucking telling names.
Are so funny. No, it's not them. Yeah. Are so funny that they know that I'm like your missus when I'm pissed. And so they told me and were like deliberately feeding me.
As a senior player, they got into my missus and were like, right, I tell you what, well, Raz has missus up and she'll Raz me up. So I'm sitting there drinking Guinness with these Irish players, this thing, and she's come over and I'm like, the chewed, I can spot it. You know, you can like dogs have got all these senses. I could smell it. I could smell the drama across the other side of the
room. Like an epileptic fit, the way a dog can smell an epileptic fit.
Yeah. I started to go to resuscitate. All right. And basically she came into it and we had the blazing round. She was basically like a suffragette. She was fighting for women's rights. And I hadn't said anything. And the more drunk she got, the more steamy got. We had the biggest fucking row.
But
we've
also,
ever had.
I had the boys winding me up. In fact, we'll just call it a total. It was Elliot Daly, Jamie George, and Johnny May all were winding me up, basically feeding me all of this stuff that was getting me more and more amped. The girls were like screaming, crying, being really angry. And so I was just like, you know what? Fuck this. I'll take one for the team. And I won't lie, I caused mayhem.
And the best thing is, I haven't done anything, Russell. I'd honestly not done anything. All I wanted to have a beer. So by the end of it, I was like that on one side of the room. Lads were talking about your wife's crying. I was like, fuck off. They're like, God, he's not very nice, is he?
But Chloe, looking back, do you think that was a proportional and correct reaction? Or would you have liked to have done a version of it that wasn't quite as...
Looking back, I wish I had just said to the girls, like, to be honest, like, the Ireland team invited us out with them, and I would have just said, fuck it, let's just go out with them.
It's only because you think they're better looking than the English
got
boys.
Got ragging from the baddies.
Yes.
But instead, like, no, yeah, I wish I'd handled it differently, and I'll tell you why. Because when you go into a team environment like that, especially, and I'm not being self-sexist, but let's just call a spade, especially as a woman, when you go into a team environment like that, it is kind of your job to be there and be supportive, whatever they decide to do. So I made the wrong call. And I've always looked back on that and regretted it. But the rugby player in question who caused the mayhem and I are now very, very good friends. So it's all okay in the end.
This is Couples Quarantine. This is Couples Quarantine.
How do you find having a relationship in the public eye where you're well known, your missus isn't well known? You said obviously a woman chatting you up, you're a good looking lad. You know, how does that work?
So Lindsay, for a start, that it works very well with us too. Lindsay won't appear on camera. I can't even get her to be in the audience on this daytime show I'm doing to be have a shot of her wave. She won't do anything like that. She's just shy and doesn't enjoy that sort of attention. That sort of works in our relationship. Some relationships, there would be a clash there. She will just about do red carpets and stand there and pose and stuff. It's a shame because she's a good-looking girl, but she's just not comfortable being photographed and all that. So far as when we're out and about, if I've got my professional comedian hat on, she's got no problem with the girls hanging around and coming for photos and stuff like that. What she can't stand is the piss take, like if we're in a club and there's a girl wants to join our table and go and start pouring herself a drink from the champagne, that's when the red line is crossed. But she is definitely not a what I would call a jealous person. Neither Lindsay or I are jealous at all, because it's just the trust is there. Yeah. So if I'm in a bar and there's a guy properly chatting up Lindsay, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
In fact, I always have done, any girl I've dated, want my girl to be the one the guys want to talk to in the bar. I quite like that, because I'm going home with you at the end of the night. But if you want to know one of the other things that causes a row between me and Lindsay at the end of the night, and I think from what I can gather, we're completely reverse to a lot of boy and girls. I know I look like fucking Stick Man, the book by Julia Donaldson, but I can fucking handle it. I like to get on it till 6 a.m. drink wise. I don't do any of that Dyson stuff.
Well, not that you're going to admit on a couple's quarantine anyway.
Be the first comedian
There's
I know.
One drug that does not work on me is I don't get it. I don't judge other people that get an effect out of it, but it just doesn't work on me. Anyway, I can handle my booze is what I'm saying. And I cannot bear Lindsay when she dresses up. I fancy her so much. We can barely get out the front door. Like, I want to nail her to the door on the way.
Oh, I love
still
that.
Still now. I'm fucking just like, not mad about her in a romantic, nice way. Mad about her in a dirty, porn, pervy way. And I have to look at that all night with her dancing on the dance floor. Maybe she's talking to another bloke and she's got a short skirt. And all I'm thinking about is ragging a sense. I'm like, please don't drink to the point where you're going to throw up. Please don't. Please do. And every time it's the what I call the Jurassic Park walking, where she's like, and then chunders and falls asleep. And the next day, I don't even want to speak to her. I've spent the whole night with the, I'm trying not to use a coarse image here, but the my balls inflating like space. I don't think it's wrong to fancy a wife.
No, it's not.
No, I love this.
And I cannot bear that the night ends up with me falling asleep. Surely that's the culmination of the end of the evening. Amazing drunken sex at 2 a.m. with someone you love. Never, never, never.
Nah.
It's but me why doing, don't, while I fall asleep on my own.
And why
I
don't you,
jealous. I love like this. I think I always dress up for him to make him get really excited to me, and so that at the end of the night I'm guaranteed to get laid, I'm guaranteed to get some action. But this one, once he's out and there's a crowd around him, like I said at the beginning, like archetypal performer and also like usually like the dominant male in the room, he gets so overexcited and carried away with everyone else that by the end of the night he's exhausted and he just wants to go to bed. And I'm like, motherfucker, I wouldn't have worn the slotty outfit if it hadn't been for you.
No, but I do.
Do you drink a bit too much? Greg Davies is my favourite image. Is it like pushing a marshmallow through a keyhole?
Greg Davies. Is he the giant tool?
He said it's like pushing a marshmallow through a keyhole.
No. No. I don't have that problem.
I've got the other. I've got Brewer's hard on. It's worse.
No, I tried to do a job sort of mid before the end of the evening, like we'll slope off somewhere or try and have some fun.
Ah, that's interesting.
Because I was going to say that could be something for you to look at, you know. Obviously, again, public eye coming out. You know, my favourite thing is me and Chloe walk out of a disabled toilet and there'll be like an elderly woman. She's like, what are you doing? And I go, my wife's not very well.
it just wouldn't cut the mustard with me. I mean, without going and giving too much insight, I wouldn't be able to do it justice.
You need a proper workbench.
Lay down. I need a top to tail survey. And I'm not going to do that on the floor of the disabled.
All right, but listen here, but sometimes you need a pre warm up. I didn't realise I was dealing with such a professional. My apologies.
Take notes.
I take notes, yeah, absolutely. Minimum,
you
need a workbench.
In society, you feel weird for saying lecherous comments about someone you're married to. I'm pretty sure that's still okay.
No, it's but not on couples quarantine. Couples quarantine is all about, you know, loving the relationship and loving the one you're with and actually saying, do you know what? It is normal to want to shag your wife in a multitude of different ways. Some legal, some illegal in certain countries. It's absolutely
exactly. That's why the jealousy thing is important, because once you have that complete trust and you can play those safe little mind games with each other, i.e. I can sit with my mates and Lindsay, some bloke might chat up Lindsay at the bar and it's safe. It keeps a little chilly spice to the relationship.
Definitely.
We're never going to be there. We never look at each other. We never look up from our drinks. But like, you're going to get bored with each other.
Look at the floor, princess, when we're out.
Who wants to be in a relationship like that?
Yeah, a lot of men are so possessive like that and think it's weird.
You
know, sex life diet. Yeah. But Chloe, actually, I mean, we talked about this, I think, on the very first Boys Don't Cry we did with you about jealousy, and that I am a jealous person if things reach a certain level. But I'm very much like you. Like, I, you know.
No, you never care. It's what I hear about it later. So, like, I mean, weeks later, and where suddenly we'll have a fight. And he was like, well, when we went to that party, don't think I didn't notice that you were dancing with X or you were talking to Y, or I saw blah, 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 cracking onto you by the loo, whatever it is. And I'm like, but did I do anything? And always the answer is no, because I've never.
Not that I saw Russell. Not that I saw. The forensic kit and the black light didn't come
then,
up.
But you
do it in front
does,
of you, that'd be disrespectful.
Then,
well, it all depends what night of the week
just
it is.
Just rude, just go around the corner. But you never care at the time, but it's weird because you don't really forget. And I do hear about it at some point. Mm. So, I mean, what is it?
That's
is
quite
it just,
a feminine trait, that, isn't it? Getting the index card out from 2 years ago. This memory is still.
Yeah, but I think you'll find it's because I'm highly cerebral and I've just got a very good memory. That's the thing is. I'm not jealous. I think that you know, because again, we've talked on your show and we know we could have gone for hours with this, but we won't. It's about kind of things like social media and the jealousies around social media.
That's different.
Stuff.
It's different. When you're both in, I'm talking, it seems like old school or something that's hard to remember now, but when you're both in a pub or a club together, you're both in the same room.
Yeah.
Unless you're married to a complete psychopath, nothing can go wrong. It's safe. If Lindsay's out, I mean, I'm not immune to jealousy. Lindsay's been out and she's like, a couple of guys joined our table tonight. Like when we went to Vegas with the girls on holiday, I was fine until some guy with like deep pockets bought a table for the girls. And all he was saying was one guy sat there with a drink and 10 girls. That's still ruffled by, there is some male in me somewhere that was I want to buy the table. And if I'd have been there, I'd have been sat next to Lindsay going, fucking great. And we're going to flirt with him. We'll get free drinks. But because I wasn't there, it felt threatening. Like, who is he? What did he look like? What were his intentions? But I find as soon as we're in the same environment, I'm like, well, and I can't be clubbed over the head and dragged into a van and attacked and I'm there, so that's not going to happen to her either.
Yeah.
And then it's you're sort of safe, really. Keep each other on your toes a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Have there been any real stories with other girls coming on to you where Lindsay's gone mad and sort of had, you know, end up almost having to choke her out?
Do you know what? I'll get in trouble for saying this, but I've noticed a real difference between the north and the south here. So I don't know which parts of the country you guys grew up in primarily, but I was on Essex and London.
Manchester.
me and Lindsay went out, shook her out or something like that. If people saw me arrive, even with a date, let alone with someone I was engaged to or married to, and Lindsay goes to the loo, everyone leaves us alone. Lads might come over, girls might come over in groups of photos. Up north, right, Lindsay would be like getting cystitis where she didn't go to the toilet, because the second she did, it's like, who's that bird you with? We're staying at Travel Lodge, me and my friends. If you want to come for a drink after, like the girls would come over. So they're a bit more ruthless up north. And that's what I think,
so quite, go
rightly,
up north.
Quite rightly pisses Lindsay off, is they're taking the piss out of her there.
Yeah.
You know, just the same as a bloke who was doing it, and blokes would, not very many men would ever dare speak like that because of the risk of violence sort of thing. But, you know, I would feel mugged off, as we would say in Essex, if someone was behaving like that. We did once, this is a funny story, we were queuing to get in the Sugar Hut. We were in a posh queue, but there was still a queue. And this guy turns up, fucking covered in paint. Oh, I own a carpeting firm. I'm friends with Mick. Like, obviously got money, but manual labourer. You were going to be in there late. You're my favourite comic. What's your name? My name's Darren. Fucking, we had loads of banter in the queue. He's fucked off. Later that night, we're in like the VIP having a drink, and he's come and sat at our table. Why wouldn't I say yes? It's not, I like meet, it's meeting people all night. And it slowly became more and more camp as the talk went on, and in the end he's like, so why don't you, like, if your missus has got, because my mum, mother-in-law and father-in-law, I brought them ironically out to a nightclub, if they're all going back for, like, why don't you just come back to mine, me and you have a few cheeky drinks. Oh no thanks mate, I'll be going back with my wife. So, but then said it 2, 3, 4 times, and then without warning, with nobody like Lindsay, went, why would he fucking go back with you, he's not fucking gay, is he, he's married to me, fuck off, just from, like, from naught to bang like that.
Yeah,
that's the only time I've explicitly seen that, because she wouldn't mug herself, if you know what I mean, by looking that desperate in front of her some girl, I won't use a derogatory term, misogynistic term, but some girl who was putting out there on me, she wouldn't lower her own behaviour for her satisfaction. But the guy was just too much.
But
she
made
poor excuses. He went, I'm Darren the carpenter. Do you want to come back for a drink? It was incredible. I've never seen
Please come back.
The full U-turn, the foot, the behind the mask, it slipped. Going, I'd love to come back, please.
Yeah, that's what they call me, the converter.
Yeah, but you know, because I remember your first stand-up.
You just questioned that yourself. I'm the converter.
I remember your first stand-up about, I must be like 10 years whenever I saw it, and you were like, I was like, you came on, you were like super flamboyant, super camp, you had your highlights in your hair, and I was like, mate, God, this guy is just so funny and gay, like, he's really nice. And you went, and halfway through the act you went, oh, by the way, I'm not gay. And I was like, no. Oh, and obviously
my whole life, I've not had it my whole life, rather. I never had any awareness of that. I come from a very small world, council estate. My mates are literally Wayne, Lee, Scott, Phil,
Terry,
Dan. They're my mates. That's the boys' group. And I've always had a girlfriend, and I've always liked talking about girls, and I'm always sending pictures of boobs. I'm just a normal black. But it wasn't until I stood on stage that I realised people perceive me as camp. It's never come up before.
I don't, though.
No, I did. First time I watched it, I was like, God,
That's gold. That is gold. A gap between perception and reality is comic gold. Yeah. You know? And at the time, I just split up with Sadie, and I'd just got exposure on TV, and I was experimenting with how I looked. It was a bad year, all the eyeliner and all that. I know that. But it was a confusing time. But weirdly, successful with the ladies. Do you know, one of the most my DMs ever, this is why I'll never understand women, one of the most crashed DMs I've ever had after a TV appearance with just, the, you know, please bone me messages, was after I dressed as Beyonce on TV.
What?
So explain that shit. So I dressed as Beyonce and did the Crazy in Love, the full dance, stop to start, and that was a... You see, funny, are you single? Just hundreds of them. It must be to do with the hips or the dance or something. I don't know what it is.
I will say, women find men who can dance, and I'm guessing if you did a whole Beyonce routine, you can dance. We find it hugely
guys,
attractive.
Guys, you need to link it to this. Please go Crazy in Love, Russell Gaines, one of my proudest achievements. I copied the video move for move. I didn't do like a comic relief version. I copied all of Beyonce's dance move for move.
I'm going to Google this.
We'll have a look at that. Russ, before we go, I want to know, do you have three tips? Because obviously there's a lot of people who listen to Couples Quarantine. People send their questions in. If you want to send some questions in to us, to answer cqquestions@jameshaskell.org. They send us all sorts of things about dating, about being single, about whether some people are interested. What are your three tips to having a happy marriage, do you think, to put you on the spot?
My number one, I'm loath to offer some of these in case some successful relationships out there don't necessarily tick these boxes.
It's your perspective.
I'm not saying you have to have these. This is just my observation amongst my friends and speaking to lots of couples over and over again, is that you need as many opposites as possible to make it interesting without being so different it can't work. So, for example, I'm watching The Crown at the moment, and it's heartbreaking watching Charles was into countryside and Diana was into the town, and it was never going to work. Broadly speaking, you want one
that's up, obsessed, really into the accounts and bills and tidy and folding the tops, and someone else is like, say what, my bra's on the floor. Grow up. So you'll have surface arguments, but underneath, when the shit hits the fan, if your diary empties because of COVID, you don't want two mother hens panicking. You mm-hmm. want one like me going, how am I going to earn money? Fuck, what if we're skinny? The other one going, babes, it's going to be all right. You know, roll with the punches. So get that balance. And it's really hard for the millennials, the people, not even millennials, the people under 23, 22, because they've grown up being told to look for people who are like them because of the narcissistic technology-based age we look in. It's very tempting. It's got to be someone who's like me. She's into rugby. She likes going out. She's just like me. It would be a mistake. It's how boring to fuck yourself. But that's what Instagram wants you to do. So you need those, the piquancy of the opposites. And the other, my second tip would be, and Lindsay, if you're listening, this would be as well, is particularly if you're in a job or if you're not great with booze, you want one person who de-escalates situation when you're out. Because we've been talking about conflict and drinking and going out tonight. And I've never been in a fight, never a violent person, but I don't need any encouragement to become animated with my mouth. And my mouth is what gets me into trouble. And so we got into a bit of an altercation in Thailand, of all places, with a couple of lads who were shouting abuse at me from across the street. And I'm absolutely pissed off, mate. I've been drinking fish bowls all night, drunk. And I'm like, if someone calls me the C word, I think it's funny. It's a sign I'm on TV enough, even in my drunken testosterone haze. But it was just one little fucking bastards, how dare they, from Lindsay. It tipped me over the edge on that particular night. And I'm not proud of it, and I have spoken about it on stage. Unfortunately, I was carrying some beer home. It was so pathetic. Bearing in mind, I've literally never hit another human being in my life. I did a double dash of the bottles, crossed my chest like Chopper with two broken bottle shafts, like fucking jig, where I've watched too many, like I think I'd watched a violent movie on the plane. And I was like, let's have it. And Lindsay changed into, please, what's all we're crying, begging wife. I was testosterone too. Are you fucking going in, cunts? Come on in. We are now walking towards each other in Thailand, an island where you're just thrown in prison for sneezing. There's these Geordies, but I was about as big as the smallest one's bicep, coming towards me. It's so funny. Do you know what diffused the situation? This is not a punchline. This is not made up for stage. This is genuinely what diffused. When I got towards them, they'd been shouting abuse at me, thinking I was Nick Grimshaw. And when I got close, I was his favourite comic.
Fucking hell.
Story, but the point is,
stupid fuckers.
Make sure you've got one of you. If tonight's subject is drinking and going out, a de-escalator, because it can be really dangerous. Like genuinely, people get probably hurt. And when this lockdown's finished and we're all back in the pubs and we'll all be binge drinking too much, you want I call it back in the taxi. Let's go home. Let's watch the Kardashians. Let's have a toasty. Not worth the energy, because most of the time it ain't worth. The only thing that's worth the energy is if you're being physically attacked. That's the only thing that's ever worth the energy. That's my second tip. Third tip, find whatever it takes, go as far as you're comfortable to stay sexually interested in each other. When that goes, I don't give a shit how much you're both into country walking, how faithful you are, how much you don't argue, it is dead. Game over. You should be porn star pervily obsessed with the person you're with. And if you're not, you need to find some pervy games or something do to trick that brain back. Because as soon as you're fucking, I know it sounds coarse, but if you are fucking, you can defeat the world.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Russell, I think that's absolutely brilliant advice. And very, unfortunately for point three, very similar to the advice my dad always gives people.
With a PowerPoint. Let's just break that out into a...
Wait, here's some slides of me and Judy. No, not again. Feature on this morning.
Squirting is not possible to
this video. Russell, where can people find you if they want to find you on social media?
So it's Russell_Kane on Twitter and on Instagram.
And you're on TV at the moment as well?
Yeah, I've been helping out with a new show, getting that off the ground with Steph McGovern, who's so amazing.
Yeah, if you ever worked, she's great. She's
that's Steph's Back Lunch, as well as cropping up on all the normal stuff you see comedians on, the stand-up shows, the panel shows. But I'm really like back in this Channel 4 show at the moment. And once we inject that Viagra vaccine, I'll be immune and I'll have a boner. Win-win.
Yeah, win-win for everyone. Okay, thank you so much, Russell. Honestly, it's been one of my favourite episodes. You're just the best.
Oh, thank you.
The best guest to have on. And yeah, thank you guys so much. This has been Couples Quarantine. Make sure you tune in next week for episode 19.
Please share, please subscribe, leave us your feedback, good or bad. We want to hear from you. And remember, you can send your questions in to us. We will answer them on any topic, relationships, sex, anything you want to know, to cqquestions@jameshaskell.org. We will catch you all very soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.